Hello, everybody, and welcome to episode 29 of the Attack in the Championship podcast. My name's Tom Butterfield. I'm your host. And let me welcome our resident guest, as always. He's a certified data analyst. He's a scout, FA licensed coach and intermediary, David Bromley. How are you, mate?
I'm all right, Tom. Thank you very much. Yeah,
you. Did you notice I didn't even need to take a breath there?
I did notice. Yeah,
I've been down the gym. I've been working on my cardio.
Yeah, why not? I mean, it's become one of those sort of, it's like muscle memory in a way, isn't it?
Yeah,
when you say
exactly.
Something the same way so many times, not only do you get sick of saying it, but you get quite good at saying it as well.
I was going to start sticking a few Game of Thrones references on the end and all that sort of thing, King in the North and Father of Dragons and all that sort of thing. But
yeah, you could try that. Wouldn't mean a lot to me, I've got to be honest.
That's why I thought I'd leave it for now and just test where you were with Game of Thrones. But big results last weekend.
Yeah, there were.
They just keep coming, didn't they?
They do. I mean,
they just keep coming.
Yeah.
I mean, you had, I think more than anything, just the relegation battle is just concertinaed completely, isn't it? Because we had the previous weekend, the last weekend in February's games, where I think we had six out of the seven teams at the bottom won, everyone except for Stoke and Rotherham. Sorry, I'm forgetting about Rotherham. But we seemed to have the same thing happen again this weekend, didn't we?
Yes, we did.
And I think we mentioned very briefly last weekend that, you know, you had Watford and Middlesbrough and, you know, they were 9 points out of it, unlikely to get dragged in. But a couple more results go that way and all of a sudden they're back in it and they're not far off now, are they?
Well, you're looking at Sheffield Wednesday, aren't you? I mean, they just keep on. And you might say, well, you know, Rotherham, that would have been a game they'd have expected to have won. But again, it's another one of those sort of real tight battles at the bottom.
Absolutely, yeah.
So that was a huge result for them. They are looking, if you're, we always say about the playoffs, don't we, that the team that goes into the playoffs with momentum is often the team that comes out successful. And I think if you go into this last sort of period of the season with momentum, as Sheffield Wednesday are, you know, you'd be brave to back against them, I think.
Absolutely. And I think I looked at the form table this morning of the Championship. The last six games, Sheffield Wednesday are third.
Really?
They've taken 15 points out of the last 18. They've only scored 8 goals in those six games, but they've only conceded 3. So defensively, they're doing fantastically. Attacking-wise, probably no greater than they have done all season, but they've just not been conceding goals like they were before, perhaps. But yeah, third and you've got QPR as well. They're sixth in the form table.
Yeah.
They've taken 13 from 18. So you've got two teams really, really pushing on there.
Banging form, aren't they?
Yeah. And then at the other end of the form table.
QPR beating Leicester. I mean, you know, you'd have got good odds on that, wouldn't you?
Absolutely. And down at the other end, the bottom five, I'll say, because I want to put Middlesbrough into this. You've got Middlesbrough in 20th. They've taken 4 from 18. Plymouth have taken 4 for 18. Sunderland have taken 3 from 18. Watford 3 from 18. And Rotherham, bless them, they've taken 0 from the last six games.
Mm-hmm.
So you'd have to say, I don't think it's any great shock to think Rotherham are gone.
But there's some stinkers in there, aren't there, really?
Yeah, there are. I mean, you look at that, and Watford and Sunderland now, and I think maybe Middlesbrough as well. No, in fact, Watford and Middlesbrough are 6 points outside the relegation zone. Lots of teams in between them, for sure. Sunderland are 9 points out, but they're just in free fall, all of those teams, aren't they? Really struggling.
They are.
If you get a few other teams like, let's have a look at the form table. You've got Sheffield Wednesday and QPR up there. You've got Birmingham picking points up. You've got Swansea picking points up. Huddersfield are in the top 10 of the form table at the moment. So might not take long, might it, to really drag Watford,
Millwall
Sunderland
as well
into the mix? Yeah,
Millwall since Neil Harris has gone back. I mean, they got a point last night.
That's right.
They were leading in that game, weren't they? So
yeah,
till our friend popped up and equalised.
Yeah. Good old Sammy. Come May, you'll stop scoring, mate. You won't score for months.
I think you might. I'm not even sure you're right there, to be honest. But Yeah, I know, it's mad.
Yeah, and then last night's games, of course, we had the top three all won, didn't they?
Yeah.
Ipswich again in another thriller.
Yeah.
Just keep scoring goals, didn't they? They're just banging them in.
I do, yeah.
But yeah, they're now, they've won their last six now.
Yeah.
Leeds looking good still. You know, haven't lost in the last six games. Probably if I have a look at the last 10 games here, yeah, you've got Leeds well at the top, 28 points out of 30 they've taken, which is pretty impressive.
Yeah, they didn't do so well in the derby game against Huddersfield, did they? But
No.
But then again, yeah, I mean, you're going to have one or two games like
absolutely.
That. But yeah, they look strong.
Yeah, they really do look good. Southampton are way down they're not way down the form table the last 10 games, actually. They're in fourth. They're 19. So doing well, but you know, still quite a few points they're dropping to Leeds and Ipswich there. Norwich, third in the form table. Now,
Josh Sargent. What about Josh Sargent again?
Lots of talk about Josh Sargent, isn't there, at the moment? Apparently Brentford are sniffing around Josh Sargent, and we're not too surprised by that, are we?
Not really. I mean, we looked at him in the Golden Boot episode, didn't we? And
we did.
Thought he could be a dark horse for that.
Mm-hmm.
And he scored again, didn't he, the other day?
Yeah, he did. Yeah, he's good.
Middlesbrough will be worrying about him for tonight's game, I'm sure.
For sure, yeah. I mean,
but it's unravelled for a couple of teams, the Middlesbrough and Sunderland particularly, isn't it? It's just completely unravelled for them. And Sunderland have lost Jack Clark now. That will be another, it's going to be another blow.
Not good, is it?
And so I just don't know with Middlesbrough. I think they've had injuries, but, you know, even so, I earlier in the season, you know, I just thought they seemed to have got it together, and I just thought they were going to be right up there, but it's just sort of one step forward, two steps back with them.
Yeah, it's just not worked, has it? It's just not worked at all. So, and now you're at the point where you've had teams pulled back into the relegation sort of area, you know, away from the playoffs, and all of a sudden now you're looking at it and saying, well, now we've Preston there in ninth, just hanging around, you know, not disappearing, are they? You know, they're only 4 points off with a game in hand on Hull. Coventry with a very impressive, you know, lots of goals scored against Rotherham last night.
Yeah.
Norwich are looking good. They could go into the playoffs if they get a win.
It's just typical Championship fare.
It really is.
Isn't it?
It really is.
And this is the time of the season when, like you mentioned this last week, about there's that overlay of it's not just about the quality of the team and the rest of it. It's all about mentally, isn't it?
Absolutely.
And the pressure and the one and the teams at the bottom scrapping for their lives. They're not going to roll over for anybody, are they?
No, so, for sure. I mean, you've got literally, we've got 10 games to go for most teams. Middlesbrough have got 12 to go, and there's some with 11 to go. But we'll have 10 games to go soon. And every single team has either got to worry, has got something to play for with regards to potential promotion, or got to stave off potential relegation.
Mm.
And it's...
Well, it's what you want, isn't it?
Oh, it's amazing. Know,
it goes really... back to, again, we talked about this, I think, last week, about the drama.
Mm-hmm.
And why do people watch football, and why do they, so many people, like the Championship? Because it's just all to play for.
Yeah, every literally. Single fixture matters.
Yeah.
You know, there are no dead fixtures at this stage of the season, you know, which I think if you... I mean, I've not looked at the Premier League table for a while, but I would imagine that there's some teams in there that are safe. They're not going to get into European competition. They're not going to go down. Mm. So there's a few teams that are already starting to think about shutting down for the season.
Yeah.
But no, Championship players, no such luxury.
Exactly.
They're full bore. They're full 100% because in 3 games' time, it could all be totally different, couldn't it?
And it's all luckily for us, because you know we're enjoying it, we're sitting there watching it. Mostly we're enjoying it.
Behind the sofa
can be a bit fraught at times, but
absolutely, but
no, it's been good.
Really enjoying it, and it's just building up to that climactic part of the season now, isn't it?
Yeah.
Good stuff. Well, remember, everybody who's listening, you can follow us on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or if you've got another preferred podcast player, you know, we don't mind which one you choose. Just have a look for Attack in the Championship and see if you can follow us on there. And we've also got the visual part of it. If you're more like to see David's scatter plots and his graphs and all those fantastic things, it's easier to follow along. I must admit, on quite a few episodes, you can pick it up just on the audio. But I think there are certain things that are great to follow along on the YouTube channel. So you can go onto there, look for Attack in the Championship on YouTube and subscribe there, and you'll get all the latest videos as soon as they're released. We also tend to cut the episodes down into smaller chunks as well on YouTube, so you can sort of get a few highlight moments there too. But the main reason for our episode today, David, was we asked a question. Well, it's usually me causing trouble. And there's that age-old question, isn't there, of the first goal so important? You know, we've got to score the first goal. If we score the first goal, you know, it changes the game. And
yeah,
but I've never really known whether that's true or not. So I handed it over to you, as always.
Yeah, you did.
I threw the grenade into the room.
You did.
And left it to you.
Well, it nearly drove me around the bend, this one. not because it is a good question. It's a very good question, and you raised it. I think you raised it in relation to a stat graphic that came up. Was it in the West Brom game? And they about the number of times they conceded first, their lamentable record from having conceded the first goal onwards.
That's right.
And I think you were sort of you said, look, you know, this looks so bad. And we started to sort of just talk about, well, we sort of uncovered the question at that point, didn't we, really? Just said, you know, what's the big deal about this first goal thing? Because clearly there's something going on there. And so we dug into it. And so what I thought we could do today is just to start off, talk about not the theory of it, but just what's behind it. Why is it? Is it that important? And why is it? Why do we say that they're so vital, the first goal? And then we'll move on to look at them in some sort of real life, in the real life scenario in the Championship, and see exactly what, you know, how it plays out. So, you know, you'll certainly be able to follow along this first bit without watching it. Because I'm just going to kind of talk a bit about it, and you know, no doubt you'll chime in and offer us your pearls of wisdom too. But I mean, going back, it's funny. I was trying to think about this quite a few years ago, not very many years ago. We didn't really seem to be obsessed with the first goal. We seemed to, you know, it's a relatively modern phenomenon, I think, to be so hyper-focused on, you know, the first goal's vital and looking at what's happened afterwards. And I think it's to do with the way that any human endeavour evolves, where, you know, going back, say, 50 years, if you wanted to start a restaurant, and I know nothing about the restaurant industry, by the way, but if you wanted to start a restaurant, I suspect, you know, you found the property. And obviously you needed to get all the equipment and so on. And if you could cook and produce something that tasted nice, you'd open the restaurant. And as long as you were doing a decent job, you'd be successful. And then gradually, over time, there becomes more opportunity to do a better job because you get technological advances, you get equipment that's produced that helps you do the job, you get more exotic recipes and dishes and ingredients, and you get, and this is the critical thing, you get curious people who want to try and see if they can do better than their competition. And so they'll work at these things, and they'll use all these advances as they come in, and they'll try to advance their operation with the use of some of these advances. Now, you might think, well, what's he going on about the restaurant industry for?
Particularly, I know it's lunchtime, that's for sure.
Well, it is, he's coming up to lunchtime, but particularly as I don't know anything about it. But I think it's the way things are. And I think it's the way things are in football. So, I, again, going back to my sort of earliest memories, you know, obviously you had teams pitched against each other and the and you had two teams of 11, obviously. Some players were stronger, more physically strong. Some players had better ball control. Some players were better in the air. Some players were quicker. Some players were more skillful and creative. And I would think most of the time, the better teams won. You know, the teams with the better players won. And this sort of probably was, and again, you get coaches and managers, and they're curious and they're ambitious and they want to beat their competition. And they start looking at things. And then, of course, you get the introduction of technologies and equipment that help you to do these things, to the point where, you know, I think first of all, it was to do with formations and tactics and strategies and, you know, how should we play with wingers? Should we play without wingers? Should we play, you know, with a foot four at the back or should we play with three at the back and so on? And all this kind of thing. And we see lots and lots of developments throughout Europe, and they come to this country, but also all around the world. And you see different styles being tried. And then gradually you start getting the sports science starts coming in. So you start being able to measure performance output, and you start being able to measure when players are beginning to look fatigued, to the point where now, you know, there's a big issue often between the head coach and the backroom staff about, you know, well, I want to play him. Well, he's only got 60 minutes in him, or he's only got 30 minutes. Mm-hmm. Well, he's fit. Yeah, but he's in this zone. He's in that zone. Yeah. He's going to start to pick up injuries. And, you know, it's becoming so the margins become finer and finer, don't they? So, and one of the things that certainly happened in football, I think from quite some time back, is coaches have learned how to defend. And I think probably in a way, some of the breakthroughs, the biggest breakthroughs in effectiveness have been in the defensive realm, because it kind of lends itself, I think, to being that way. And it's become a case of now, if you go to a football a training ground, you'll hear the coaches talking about, I mean, one of the things to talk about in coaching is that it's all about possession or position. So obviously, some of the time you're in possession, and if you're going to win the match, you've got to score goals. And if you're going to score goals, you've got to have some possession. And we go back in our episodes talking about how you get out of this division, and you do have to win matches. It's not enough to say we're really solid at the back and we don't lose matches. You've got to win matches. So, of course, you've got to have possession, and you've got to have a strategy when you're in possession. But when you lose possession, then it's about this marvelous thing we all hear so much about now, about shape. And it's to do with, and shape is really referring to your defensive shape as a team. And we talk about, and you watch a match and you can see what's going on. You can see that players have, for the most part, they have two jobs, don't they? They have a job to do and a place to be when their team's in possession, to offer opportunities and to try and get into space, to try and create chances. And the other job they have is to get back into shape when the team loses possession. Mm-hmm. And you watch them and you can see them shuffling from one to another. And you can see the shape of the team that's not in possession shuffling across the pitch and are back again. And then we know about pressing styles, and we know about pressing triggers when perhaps your opponent's got the ball and they miscontrol it. That can be a trigger to your team to press, or when a certain player gets the ball, or when the team gets the ball in a particular part of the pitch, or whatever. And the pressing's become very scientific as well. It's not all about, well, this player presses that player. It's about this 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 players press, and they don't get isolated. Absolutely. And they're not just pressing the player by putting that player under pressure and cutting down his space, but they're cutting down passing lanes. Mm-hmm. They're looking at where the opportunities for that player to progress his team are, and trying to cut those out. So we've got all of this, you know, you can see it's easy to understand how defensively coaching has become much more sort of sophisticated, really. Now, the reason for this is because, a bit like if you think about a military exercise, you're the most vulnerable when you're attacking. Because when you're in shape, when you're not attacking, and in football, when you don't have the ball, the players can learn where they need to be. They can learn how to defend as a unit. They can learn about which parts of the pitch to prevent the opposing team getting into. We've talked about the zone 14, just outside centrally, just outside the penalty area. It's a very, very dangerous area for you to allow your opponent space. We also know, you know, often teams won't want their opponents to get down the sides, to get round the back and out wide, so they can get the ball in from wide areas. So there's certain particular parts of the pitch you want to protect. You're trying often to force the opponent to play in the congested areas when they've got possession and you're out of possession. So we're looking at this. This is one of the things that when you attack as a team, you risk your lovely organized defensive shape suddenly becoming disjointed, because it has to. You can't stay in a defensive shape and pose an attacking threat to your opponent. Mm-hmm. So there's a really vital point in a match when it gives maximum opportunity for your opponent to attack you when you're the weakest. And that is that this transition between when you attack and when you want to get into shape. So when your attack breaks down, suddenly you don't have possession and you're not in shape.
Mm-hmm.
And the soft underbelly of the team is exposed. So I think the fundamentally, the reason why the first goal is so important is because until such time as you go behind in a match, you don't necessarily have to get out of shape. Mm-hmm. You know, if you want to, you can decide to stay in shape for almost all of the match and make it very, very difficult for your opponent to break you down. As soon as you concede a goal, you're going to get nothing out of that match. So to lose 1-0 is probably the same, a lot of the time, is 3-0 or 4-0. You get nothing. So at some point in that football match, from the point when you concede a goal, you've got to risk exposing your weaknesses to your opponent. And that's why it's so important. Because if you score the first goal, really, pressure's off you, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
You know, you can, and I think the point is, and this might sound rather obvious, but the point being, teams have learned, certain teams under certain coaches have learned how to be almost impregnable when they've got the luxury of being able to stay in their shape. And West Brom, you know, you brought them up before.
Yeah.
I think are a good example of a championship team who you don't want to go behind to, because they have a group of players and they've been drilled by a coach who understands very much about how to protect the vulnerable areas of the pitch and the vulnerable players if necessary, so that if they're ahead, you know, they don't need to attack you.
Hmm.
Now, obviously, if you've got the luxury of being able to have that on the one hand and some creative players on the other hand, then what you're going to do is when you go ahead, you're going to say, well, okay, you come and attack us then. When you do, we know you're going to leave some spaces. You're going to be in a shape that you don't really want to be in. And we have the ability to exploit that.
Yeah.
I think that's, you know, with regard to West Brom again, you know, that they've had difficulties with strikers and bringing players in, as mm-hmm. we know, because of the off-the-field problems they've had. So they would probably like to feel they were stronger at that than they are.
Yeah.
But nevertheless, and I think really that's, in a nutshell, that's why it's so important, because, you know, it's we've learned as a, you know, a group of footballers and coaches and players how to make life very, very difficult for teams to score against us. But we've got to somehow do that and simultaneously be threatening. Until we get the first goal, then we don't need to worry.
Yeah.
Does that, I don't know if that's
Yeah, absolutely. No, it makes sense. And I think it's, and I guess, and maybe you'll tell us in a bit, you know, West Brom play a certain way, quite a distinctive, different way to a lot of teams in the Championship. And it's whether there are some, I mean, Ipswich have been involved in some really high scoring games of late. And I suppose it's, are there certain teams where the first goal is more important than others, I suppose?
Mm. Well, I think this is where what you started to allude to last week, wasn't it? And we started talking about it. The other thing we've done is we've looked at from the beginning, right from the beginning of the season, we've tried to categorise the teams in the Championship, their playing style, not through our own judgment or our own opinions, but through purely the numbers. We've tried to put them into a style. And we had the five playing styles. We had the possession-based style, an outright attacking style, a pressing style, a counter-attacking style, and a direct style. And we still use those, and we still sort of look at teams in that way. But what you were talking about was, you know, was there, did the style of play that the team tend to employ make a difference to how effectively they might be able to, you know, counter the fact that they lost the first goal or protect the fact that they scored the first goal? Sure. And so that's what nearly drove me mad, really, trying to figure out a way to address that. Because it's such a good question, isn't it? And it's a good question that I wanted to try and get somewhere with. So, I mean, the first thing I did was I had another look at how we sort of categorise these styles. And I thought, well, another way of looking at this is to say there's really three elements to a playing style, you could say. Two sort of main elements are how possession-based is the team? And they would go from sort of one end of the spectrum would be, you know, a highly possession-oriented team, like, say, Southampton, to the other end of the spectrum being a direct team, a team that isn't particularly concerned about how much possession they have, want to get the ball forward, want to get territory and want to have their physical battles, their one-on-ones in the final third where the outcome of those battles could be very rewarding. And, you know, there are a number of teams that employ that kind of style. Teams like, you know, in the past, teams like Millwall have done it. Millwall have been a little bit of a hybrid in a way because they've gone from that style to a style they tried to, you know, tried to develop into, which I didn't work out too well for them. No. And I think they're, at least for the time being, I think they're going to go back to a more of a direct style.
Yeah.
But then you've got Preston, you know, who don't particularly seem to want to worry about who's got the ball. You know, they're more focused on what they want to focus on. And there's nothing wrong with any of this. It's a style of play. Yeah. So that's one element. How possession-based are you? Are you a highly possession-based team or are you more of a direct team? The other main element is how attacking you are. So are you a team who, when you get the ball, your first thought is, we're set up to attack. We need to bring our attacking players, our creative players into play early and regularly. And again, you know, the teams at the top of the league tend to be those types of teams, the Leicesters, the Southamptons, the Leeds. Those teams where, and there are others, that will immediately look to attack you. At the other end of that spectrum are the counter-attacking teams, the teams that will say, well, going back to what we've just talked about, really, we're comfortable, we're confident that we are a difficult side to play through, a difficult side to break down. And in a way, we will kind of almost, even when we've got the ball, we will try to invite the teams to come at us, because what we're going to try and do is counter them. When they attack us, we're going to try and spin this transition quickly into our advantage by whatever means we choose to do. So are you an attacking team or are you a counter-attacking team? Then finally, what I really came around to was the idea of pressing is more of an overlay on those two main elements, because you can have a high press or a sort of moderate press, irrespective of the main playing style that you employ. You can be a possession-based team who press high, or you can be a counter-attacking team who, you know, press high and who press strongly. So it's really an overlay. And so what I developed from there was a style, a category, which has three elements to it. So for every team, through the numbers, we're able to say where they are high or moderate in terms of their possession or their direct style, or and in terms of their attacking intentions, they're either highly attacking or they're counter-attacking or they're moderately attacking. And then in terms of pressing, they're either a high pressing team or a moderate. Every team presses, you know, when you look at it, they all press, but they're either a highly sort of pressing inclined team or they're a moderate pressing team. And so if you're going to follow along at some point on and look at some charts, what we've done is we've created these charts showing how teams have responded to either scoring or conceding the first goal as a group. So we've grouped together the teams that we think are similar in their playing styles. And we've said, well, how does that group of teams tend to have addressed, you know, the issue of the first goal? And so, and that's kind of quite interesting. We saw if this season so far, there are 8 playing styles as opposed to 5 with these little sort of, you know, if we manipulate them around a bit, as I've just said. And so, for example, Leeds, Leicester and Southampton are at one end of the spectrum where they employ a highly possession-based, highly attacking, high press style. Those two teams are at that end of the spectrum. And I suppose the opposite of that is a team that is a direct style counter-attacking with a moderate press. And the team at that end of the spectrum is Birmingham. So if you like, they're very different. They're as different as they could be. So you can split these teams up, and we've color-coded them to hopefully make it easier if you are going to look at any of the graphics. So, you know, the darker the color, so green relates to your possession style, and the darker the green, the more of a possession-based team you are. And blue relates to a direct style. So the darker the blue, the more direct you are. And red is attacking, gold is high press. And so, again, you can look at those and say, well, I can look at a group on a chart and know what they are by the colours. So that just left us to sort of have a look at, so far this season, you know, where do these teams fit? And you know, we'll put the charts up. But we won't go on because they're kind of a bit difficult to describe if you're not looking at them. So I won't go on about them. But I think the first chart we've got is what's the percentage of the points possible do each group of teams, according to their style, manage to win, irrespective of who scores the first goal? And so you've got, you know, some of these groups that we talked about where the Leicesters and the Leeds and the Southamptons are involved in them. They, unsurprisingly, because they're at the top of the league, they get the most points possible at home and the most points possible away. Some of the teams are stronger at home, or some of the playing styles are stronger at home and some of them are stronger away. And, you know, they're dotted around on there and you can look at them and sort of see where they fit. the next chart we've got some examples of which teams belong in which group, just so you can remind yourself where they belong. And then the next one is, after they've scored the first goal, how do they then shape up? So what percentage of points do they manage to achieve after they score the first goal at home and away? And then what percentage of points do they manage to achieve once they concede the first goal at home and away? So these charts are hopefully just a slightly easier way to visualize the numbers than just looking at numbers. But we've also gone, we've done the same actually for the last season, just to see really how things played out. But we've also got some charts which just show each team and where they fit on the chart. So when you look at that, you can see that the strongest team after scoring the first goal, really, I suppose you'd say, if you think about home and away, is Leeds, because mm-hmm. Once they score the first goal, they're sort of 90% there, whether they're at home or whether they're away.
Yeah.
And then, unfortunately for them, Rotherham are on the other end of the spectrum. So when they score the first goal, they're about 50% chance of winning if they're at home, mm-hmm. but less than 10% chance if they're away.
Yeah.
But I don't think they do score the first goal away very often. No. So there's not very much probably to go on there. But you can sort of see where they all land. But I just wanted to go back to the comment that you made that sort of kicked all this off, because I've got some numbers in front of me here to do with West Brom.
Mm-hmm.
And I could barely believe my eyes. Well, I kind of knew what I was going to see because you'd already told me about the graphic you saw. But when West Brom concede the first goal at home, which they've done four times,
mm-hmm.
they've got 8% of the maximum points they could have got after that.
Wow.
And that's at home. That's four games. Mm. They haven't won any of them, and they've drawn one of them. They've got 1 point. Away, they've conceded the first goal eight times.
Mm-hmm.
They've drawn two, they haven't won a game. They've got 8% of the points away from home as well. So obviously, unsurprisingly, 12 times they've conceded the first goal, 3 points from those 36 potential points. So they're far and away, the least effective team at coming mm-hmm. back after conceding the first goal. Only 8% of the points. Yeah. So that's an indicator of what, at its absolute extreme, really, what we've talked about.
It's really interesting, because if you're an opposing coach or an opposing team, you are saying, we've got to score first, haven't you? We've got to score first.
Yes.
But then you're also aware in the back of your mind, if we overcommit and we go behind against these guys, it's going to be really hard to get back into it, because they wouldn't be in fifth for no reason, would they? So I would imagine when we turn that figure around, we find quite a different story.
Well, I'll do it now. So when they score the first goal, which they've done 19 times this season,
mm-hmm.
they've won 16, lost one and drawn two. They have 88% of the available points once they go ahead. She's why you don't want to let them go ahead.
No.
which is not actually, it's not all that unusual. So going from the top, Leicester City have scored first in 27 games and they've got 85% of the points. Leeds have scored first in 18 and they've got 93%. Ipswich have scored first in 17 and they've got 90%. Southampton have scored first in 25 and they've got 83%. West Brom, we said, have got 88% from 19 games. And mm-hmm. Hull have scored first in 15 and they've got 84%. So, and there's also Sunderland and Bristol City
mm-hmm.
who've got more than 80% of the points after scoring first. Now, they've mm-hmm. scored first in fewer games, which is why they're lower down in the division. Mm-hmm. But it's still, and would you believe Stoke City have got 79% of the points after scoring first. Well, they've only scored first in 11 games.
Right.
So, you know, it just shows you. And when they concede first, which they've done in 19 games, they've only got 9% of the points.
It's amazing, isn't it?
Yeah.
It is amazing. I expected it to be that we'd find scoring the first goal was important, but I didn't think it would be that important. You know, that is huge, isn't it? You know, teams going from in the high 80% of the amount of points they take home or away, you know, combined, down to single figures.
It's incredible, isn't it?
It's unbelievable. It really is.
After scoring the first goal, on average, this is, teams get 74% of the points. And after conceding the first goal, 20%.
That's amazing.
It's incredible.
So when we're looking at this, you know, which teams are almost like cockroaches, you know, where in the nicest possible way, of course, where whether they go ahead or behind, it's not as big a difference for them.
Well, that's a good point. That's a good question. I suppose, to be honest, Ipswich stand out because Ipswich, when they concede first, still get 53% of the available points, which is the highest in the whole of the division. Only just slightly higher than Leeds, who get 48%.
Okay.
But generally speaking, that is the top three. You've got Ipswich get the most, 53.
Mm-hmm.
Leeds get 48%, Leicester get 43%. Other than that, they're all pretty not dire, but they're way down from there.
Yeah.
You know, the next best is Coventry at 33%. So it's not, there aren't many teams that are able to really counter the fact that they've conceded first. We know West Brom's is diabolical. Southampton only 19% of the points, but then they've only gone behind in nine games. Well, you know, it's still nine games. They've only won one of those games that they've gone behind in, and for a team in fourth place,
you know, it shows a weakness, doesn't it? Because you know, when it comes down to the end of the season, we know from last week's episode. Where things start to really, when the pressure heats up and you've got intangible things to take into account. If you go behind and you're only getting 19% of the points, whereas other teams around you are picking up, you know, 50%, high 40s, I think that's gonna play out at some point, isn't it? And even if you're in a playoff semi-final or a final, when you're up against those really, really good teams, if Ipswich are 50% of the points and Leeds are close to 50 and Leicester are close to 50, they're thinking, well, if we go behind, we'll probably get back into the game. You know, one out of every two, it's almost a toss of the coin, isn't it? It's like, oh, well, we've gone behind, but we've done this many times before. But Southampton, for example, they're looking at only, you know, picking up 19% of points. That tells me that they're less likely to get back into the game or less likely to get ahead. So, you know, winning from losing positions, I think Ipswich are probably top from that graphic. And obviously Leeds are going to be close behind them. But it is amazing. Looking at these two graphs, I've got them positioned one above the other as you sent them over to me.
Yeah.
In performance after scoring the first goal, we want to be in the top right of the graph, don't we?
Yeah.
And almost every team is over on that right-hand side, apart from Rotherham.
Yes.
Sorry to bring it up again, Rotherham. And then it's almost a complete switchback, apart from Ipswich and Leeds. Teams just go right down to that left-hand bottom corner, don't they?
Well, you're right, because when you look at the charts, they're very revealing, and that's why I kept the scales the same, because I was thinking, well, it's a bit busy, this, I'm going to try and sort of make everything in the middle, and then I thought, well, that really does show you, doesn't it, the
difference between
scoring and conceding. It's so different.
I mean, if someone said to me, is the first goal really that important, I could probably pull up these two graphs and someone would go, oh, right.
Yeah.
It is really bloody important.
Yeah.
I can see it right there.
Talking about last season, because again, you think, well, you know, I wonder if this is always the way, you know, or, but looking at last season, Burnley would overall, after conceding the first goal, Burnley still got 60% of the points available.
Right.
They only conceded in 10 games first, but they got 60%. But after that, nobody even got 40%.
Really?
So the best after that was Middlesbrough at 39. So it really shows you that it's a real tough job getting back, doesn't it, as you say?
Do you think that sort of – there's been lots of talk in the Championship fans group that we're associated with now. And people are saying, you know, this season's Championship, the top of the Championship seems to be stronger than ever. And do you think little stats like that, where you're seeing teams coming back from losing positions, you know, being in the 50s and in the high 40s, you know, compared to before other seasons, do you think that shows that the relative strength of those top teams is higher than last season?
Well, it's a good question. I don't know the answer, but it could be, couldn't it? Yeah, there's something different about it for sure. So, I mean, if you look at it, as you say, I hadn't really kind of looked at them across the two seasons like that. And I suspect we could do more of that. It could well be that. I mean, you could argue, is it because they're better at coming back, or is it that this season they're not, or that last season they were better at defending those positions?
Sure, yeah.
Last season, only 18% of the points were won by the team who conceded first. And this season it's 20%. So it's not a fluke. It makes me think about when I've read things about the military battles and military strategy, again, which is not something I pretend to be an expert on by any means, but you read things about how Wellington would won his battles because he didn't take chances. He waited until his opponent was weak, and he hit them when they were weak.
Hmm.
You know, it wasn't like, well, we have a shot, you have a shot, as Paul Merson would say.
Yeah.
You know, it wasn't like we'll stand toe-to-toe and see who's got the strongest firepower. It was always about, we wait until you're weak, and then we have that battle, which is what, I guess, that wild animals do, isn't it?
Yeah, absolutely.
So
it's survival, isn't it?
Yeah, and what we're doing, I mean, and you watch teams, don't you, where they pass the ball around and pass the ball around and don't seem to be going anywhere with it. Now, I don't know that they're always doing this, but I think the idea is, look, especially when when you're behind, and as the game wears on, of course, then it becomes more of an issue. But unless you're losing, there isn't any great benefit to sort of squaring up to your opponent unless you know that you're stronger.
Mm-hmm.
So you might as well say, we just wait until you've shown us that you're weak, and then that's when we go. And so, you know, some people sort of lament that style, don't they? Oh, God, more and more passing around the back and across the pitch and across the pitch. But done properly, that's what you're waiting for, isn't it? That opportunity.
I think so. I think you're hoping to physically move the other players around, you know, your opposition players around, to try and get them out of their shape. You're also hoping to psychologically, I think, frustrate them as well, because no one wants to be running backwards and forwards and not getting anywhere near the ball and that sort of thing. So you're hoping that frustration builds up, someone overcommits, and all of a sudden that shape has gone, and like you said, that's the weakness, and then all of a sudden you're in, you know, if you can see the opportunity. So,
and it's tiring as well, Tom, because
it is.
If you're having to constantly shuffle, you know, to your opponent and then back and to your to close down the space,
and you've got to know where your teammates are all the time as well. I mean, I played over in the States. I played a team who were they would have got promotion to the MLS. They won the A-League, the league below. So we played against them, and we played a purely zonal system of defence against them, where we only defended our own half. And I had to know, I would get the information from the players behind me about where they wanted me to go. So I had to know where my centre forward was inside me. I had to know where the fullback was, my centre midfielder and my centre back. So I would get different calls from them. And of course, you're moving, but you're also concentrating on what's happening behind you, and you have to move around. And once you start to get fatigued, because these guys could zip the ball about, you know, real fast.
Yeah.
As soon as you start to get fatigued, you're not quite hearing the information as clearly as it was before. You're not reacting to the information as clearly as before. You're maybe caught ball watching for a split second. But of course, players at this level, at championship level, they'll see that half chance and they're in and they're behind you, you know, as quick as, aren't they? Because that's what they've been training all week to try and identify. And as soon as that picture shows for them, that's it. They're away.
And it's mentally draining as well, isn't it? It's tiring because, as you say, you can't just play on the fly. You're constantly trying to think about where you are, where you need to be, constant and concerning yourself with not making a mistake.
Mm-hmm.
There's more to it than probably as there is with everything that meets the eye. But this has really kind of nailed the question of how important it is, isn't it?
One of my favourite phrases: complexity is failed simplicity. And you've got it here. Is these two graphs that I've still got sitting in front of me? Performance after scoring the first goal. Most teams are up in the top right quadrant of there, apart from Rotherham, who are down on their own, and they're down there on their own at the bottom of the league. And then one performance after conceding the first goal. Almost every team, or certainly the vast majority of teams, are very much down in that left-hand bottom corner, even more so than after scoring the first goal, except for your Ipswiches and your Leeds. So it just shows how important it is to be able to get that first goal. And then, as you said, you know, sit in your shape, not overcommit, you know, stay safe and stay secure, and make the other team do something that maybe they're not, you know, able to do, or they're not skilled enough to do. But
and you know, it gives you a better chance, doesn't it? When you're attacking, you want to be attacking the team when they're not in shape.
Absolutely.
But when they are.
Yeah.
Because
you want them to overcommit, you know, get out of shape, you know, really try and push on. Mm. And if they do that, then you've got a better shape of adding to your goal tally, haven't you? Thank you very much for that, David. I really, really enjoyed that. And it answers that question really, really well. Keep your questions coming in. You know, anyone in the Championship Fans group, feel free to send me a message if you've got any questions. I've had some really, really good ones come in of late. But I think that's it for episode 29, isn't it, David?
Yeah, I think so. Yeah.
But thanks again, everyone. Thanks for listening. And we'll see you next week for Attacking the Championship. See you soon. Bye-bye.